Welcome to the What Dreamers Do podcast. I'm your host, Carla Gover, an Appalachian musician, flatfoot dancer, mama, creative, and dreamer from Kentucky. I'm on a mission to inspire others to realize their dreams and live their most creative lives. Grab you a mason jar full of sweet tea or something a little stronger and pull up a chair, because it's time to get your dream on. Who's been following you? Because that's what dreamers do. Welcome, dreamers, to this week's episode of the What Dreamers Do podcast. And this week, we are continuing our conversation with the amazing Sam Gleaves of Berea, Kentucky. He is a clawhammer banjo player, picker of all kinds of instruments, songwriter, singer, artivist, educator, and general all-around awesome human being. If you did not catch last week's episode, be sure and go listen to that one. Before this one, you can hear some more background about where Sam's from and how he grew up learning this Appalachian music that he plays and promotes so beautifully now. And in this episode, we're going to dive into some more of his work as an artivist and learn why he does not call himself an activist and hear another one of his beautiful songs. So stick around. You're going to love Sam as much as I do.
And when I was at Berea College, I got involved with the STAY project. Ada Smith came up to me and said, the STAY Together Appalachian Youth Project is a youth network still very much active. Young people in Appalachia who want to create a more sustainable, inclusive future by working in their home communities. Mm-hmm. And, Ada came to me and said, you know, like, do you want to help us? Do you want to be involved? Do you want to be on this steering committee? And I said, I can't be on a steering committee. I don't know what that means, you know? And then, so, but by involvement with the STAY project, which is connected to the Highlander Center, Apple Shop, going to those institutions, meeting other young people who had fire in their hearts for social and environmental justice. And that was very important, too.
Well, yeah, both of those organizations that you mentioned are so amazing. And I am always in awe of the vein of activism that has been present in Appalachia. And I think that's another thing that doesn't get talked about enough.
I agree. Yeah. I should also mention High Rocks Educational Corporation in West Virginia is also connected to the STAY project.
Okay.
Three parent organizations of this network that's mm-hmm. now in its own thing. But the STAY project, if you're a young person that in Appalachia, I hope you'll look that up.
Awesome. Well, you're also working now with a lot of young people in your new capacity. I know I still think of it as your new job. How long have you been there at Berea?
I started in the fall of 2020.
So it's pretty new.
It is new. Yes. Yeah. I feel very grateful and honored to be working at Berea College, because when I enrolled at Berea College in 2010, I enrolled because they had a bluegrass ensemble. I couldn't believe that you could get course credit for playing in a working bluegrass band and touring and traveling and learning to perform in that way. Al White was the founding director.
Right.
And he founded the group in around the year 2000. But Berea has this rich, long history with traditional music from its beginnings. But anyway, Al was and continues to be a great mentor and friend, and playing in that band for 4 years as a student at Berea really just inspired me and showed me new possibilities. Because when I enrolled at Berea College, I didn't think I could earn a living playing music. Mm-hmm. I just thought that, oh, you know, like music is something that I'll continue to do in my life, but it will be second to some other kind of work, you know. And so to be able to teach there now, and when Al White chose to retire in 2020, and I was fortunate enough to be asked to fill that position of teaching Appalachian instruments, one-on-one lessons with students, and fiddle and banjo and guitar and mandolin, that sort of thing, and directing this bluegrass band of student musicians, I was so excited. I mean, I love my work every day. I really do. And the students are showing me new possibilities too, you know, because they have their own spark and perspective. A lot of them are from Appalachia. Some, you know, there's a lot of international students at Berea. People come from very diverse backgrounds. I love the community of art and activism in Berea, and it's great to be part of it.
Well, that's a great thing to be able to say that you love your work every day.
I do.
And presumably you're still doing some performing and some teaching in the summer. In fact, you're going to be coming to Cowan Creek Mountain Music School.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love Cowan Creek. And you're a big part of why I love it, you know, because that's a special opportunity to come and learn music in the mountains in Eastern Kentucky, to see and be part of the landscape that has created and informed this music.
Yes.
You know, and to be there and to hear the voices, to be able to walk over to the old regular Baptist church and hear singing there just the people that run the Cowan Community Center are the salt of the earth. Absolutely. And incredible community organizers.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I always felt like Cowan Creek is really, you know, with Bev May's leadership and others, mm-hmm. that's community organizing. I mean, they are providing an open door for people to learn about Appalachian culture there on Cowan, you know, and like that, for young people from that area to come and learn this music, along with people that travel in from Brooklyn or wherever they may come from, you know, and it's a loving, very much a welcoming space to learn to play, mm-hmm. and to hear the stories that are the backbone of this music.
It is. It's really special. And that's one of the drums that I beat a lot, is that, even though I am happy that so many people all over the world love Appalachian music and want to perform it and play it, I really believe in our Cowan Creek School because we have the opportunity to share the cultural context for what we are teaching. And it's personal. It's not mm-hmm. just, I learned this from field recording number 47. This was, you know, I learned this on so-and-so's porch. And we used to play this one after we worked in the fields all day. You get the stories and you get the real life connections, and there's just something really special about that. So it's kind of what you were talking about with the chance to learn knee to knee with the older players, the elders of the art form. And I always think of in Buddhism how they have the idea that you take direct transmission from the guru, and you sit with the guru and meditate or chant with them, and then the spiritual energy comes right from his belly into yours. And that's what's going on. That's really what Cowan is like. You're getting direct transmission from these masters of fiddle and banjo. And so
it is.
And you're going to be one of our visiting masters.
Oh, I'm blushing just thinking about that. That term at Deborah Payne, a great fiddler from Berea, who I play a lot of music with. Deborah and I love to play and sing together. And she's played for dances her whole life and is one of my favorite fiddlers and singers to hear. And so she will be doing that performance together, but I'm most excited about walking around to the classes, hearing everybody, you know, to get to sit with people like Randy Wilson and Carla Gover and others at this camp is really valuable. And I just want to share one little story as why Cowan's so important to me is that Carol Eisen, mm-hmm. Who helped found the Cowan Community Center, right? I mean,
well,
establish
it. She and her husband actually built yeah. the building.
Yeah.
And she helped establish the community. She grew up there her whole life. And she was actually my sixth and seventh grade teacher at Martha Jane Potter Elementary School.
Yeah. Well, so I got asked to come to Cowan as a teaching assistant. I guess Bev May maybe had asked mm-hmm. me, and I was so thrilled, you know, and excited. I think one year we were together. I was your teaching assistant. Mm-hmm. And so I was just so thrilled because I love a gig like that when you can just watch a master teacher like you and you know, just support. And I learned so much that week. And at lunch one day, Carol Eisen was sitting next to me and she said, "I don't think I've met you before. Who are you? Tell me about you and your story." And I almost tear up every time I think about that, because that touched me so much, that I was this long-haired hippie kid come down there from Berea, you know, and, you know, probably hadn't washed my hair that day or anything else. And here, this wonderful woman who reminded me of my grandmother, mm-hmm. Wanted to know who I was and why I was there. And that's the kind of welcoming spirit that is at Cowan. You know, really is for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it is in the place, but it's for everybody, and you learn so much and enjoy the experience so much, you know.
Well, I'll be sure to put the link in the show notes so anybody that wants to can sign up and find out more.
Last full week of June, right?
It is a family reunion and a party and dancing and singing and eating, and we look forward to it all year.
True.
Well, just have a few more questions before we wrap it up here. I know we could talk all night, but
yes. Well, you fed us so well. I enjoyed the supper you made, and this I'm enjoying looking at your picture of your granny and you right there. Yeah, this is the right place to be talking about these topics.
It's good. Kitchen table magic. Well, I just wanted to ask if you have any goals for your music or your art that you might want to share with us, whether it be projects or just more of a general goal that you have.
Well, the Stanley Brothers advertised for Martha White Flour, so I'm going to do a sort of cooking advertisement here to support this podcast. I have a confession to make. I love to cook from scratch, but many nights these days, I'm only cooking for my son and myself. When I'm busy and tired, sometimes it's a little bit too easy to get takeout, so I decided to try some of those meal kit boxes that I saw advertised, and I went through four different ones until I found the one that I like best, Home Chef. Every week, I get to pick four meals that I think my family would like, and they send the ingredients right to my door. This isn't processed food either. It's just healthy meats, fresh vegetables, and grains that I prepare. It usually takes me 30 minutes or less to get supper on the table, and my picky son loves every meal. Plus, it's way cheaper than takeout. If you want to try it out, just go to carlagover.com/supper. I don't get paid for this endorsement. I just truly like the product. And if you sign up using my link, they will send me credits toward my own boxes. And with an almost 13-year-old boy in the house, I could use them. Plus, all that good food is going to help me keep recording this podcast for you. Just do me a favor and don't tell Granny.
I'm interested in helping to, in some way, tell the story of LGBTQ+ musicians from Appalachia or that play Appalachian music, mm-hmm. because there have been a lot of them mm-hmm. through our history. A real world string band, and those women have been a tremendous inspiration to me.
Speaking of, Sue Masick is also going to be at Cowan Creek.
Yes, Sue Masick is the real world string band member who I met first.
Okay.
And they are a great example of musicians with social consciousness.
Absolutely.
And writing new songs in the tradition that honor women's stories, especially, mm-hmm. and fighting oppression through their music, you
That's
know,
right.
and bringing people together. So when I see a great inspiration like Real World String Band and what they did in their 40-year career, you know, I think we need to tell this story somehow, you know, and that's what I'm thinking about a lot right now. And yeah, there are many other, you know, there are many other musicians who are LGBTQ and have navigated this culture in Appalachia that is very complicated in terms of how people of different identities have been treated or how welcome they are, you know. And so there's a story of resilience there. And so I'm interested in pursuing that. Not only through singing the songs that these folks have written, but, you know, also writing about, recording oral histories, trying to share these stories, you know.
Okay, so broadening it beyond maybe just playing music. I feel like that's kind of what you're mentioning. I feel like it's kind of been my process throughout the pandemic is, as a songwriter, I've always loved being sort of a storyteller through music, but I feel like I've just been finding more ways to connect with people, largely revolving around stories or life stories. And that sounds kind of like what you're talking about, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, and in my own songwriting right now, the songs I've written in the past couple of years have been more visibly, openly queer than songs I've written in the past. Mm. I think coming into my own body in a different way in the past couple of years has helped me to be more honest in my musical expression. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, in my own songwriting, that's a thread that's coming up too, trying to be whole, mm-hmm. you know, in mm-hmm. terms of not censoring myself, not censoring my queerness out of my music, which has been kind of an impulse that I have felt because of where I grew up and to a degree, you know, the culture of the old time music community sometimes can be a little bit censoring.
We live in the Bible Belt with certain sets of morals. I feel that in general, playing traditional music and somebody who is pretty left-wing liberal politically, and sometimes my songs reflect that, but then sometimes I'm playing for audiences that have really different political, religious persuasions, and mm-hmm. and you can feel a little bit of a pressure, like, I shouldn't sing that song here, mm-hmm. and I can imagine that would be true for you, but
yeah.
It seems like it should be so much easier for us to just be who we are and like express ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm still learning that too. And like, shouldn't I know how to do this by now? Shouldn't I just be able to say whatever I want and let the chips fall where they may? But no, I'm still working on it.
Me too. I tell you, reading the room is such a skill and such a challenge. And for me, there's a complex sort of equation that happens when I start thinking about, am I going to sing this song that acknowledges queerness or my queerness or that has a message about social justice?
Right.
Okay, if I'm, you know, playing music, there are other people present. Am I going to sing one of these songs that I feel like has a story that not everyone has heard before or not everyone feels comfortable hearing? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a hard question because my fundamental goal as a performer is to bring people together and to share this music, to take people to the place where this music comes from. That's something that Jenny Hawker talks about a lot and many others, you know, but, you know, that's my fundamental goal is, you know, like, can we come together through music? But also, sometimes if we don't sing the song that tells a truth that not everyone is comfortable with, our truth, mm-hmm. or trying to bring another community's story into the room, who's going to do it? I mean, you know, like, when is that going to happen if we don't do it?
Right. And we might be depriving somebody of the chance to grow or open their mind.
Yeah.
And then they'll never have that opportunity again.
And I have done it many times. There have been many times where I felt like I was playing in a church or a space that I wasn't sure how people would receive mm-hmm. a song that may have some kind of thread that people think of as controversial. But I mean, people's lives to me are not controversial.
Right.
But, you know, that's a hard tightrope to walk. And I support people who make those choices carefully. And, you know, I think we make those choices carefully because we care.
About
how people feel, them feeling welcome and comfortable. But also, Sue Masick told me when she was learning from members of, Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Oh.
Because Real World String Band and Sue Masick would go to Highlander Center and learn from artists like Sweet Honey in the Rock. And I think she quoted Bernice Regan as saying, too often singers are considered just entertainment. You know, like, there's a real message and a story behind these songs, you know, and it's good to tell it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I've also really struggled in some situations of finding the courage to cross that barrier.
Well, it's interesting to me because, you know, we're thinking about these things and we're talking about them probably more than many artists, people of artistic temperament would, because we're working in a traditional art form that, like you said, comes with its own set of, you know, preconceptions and tendencies and a cultural community that may or may not have always been open to a lot of diverse ideas. But I just finished reading Amanda Palmer's memoir, and she, you know, in case you don't know who she is, she was a member of the Dresden Dolls. She's a singer, songwriter. She is the queen of crowdfunding before anybody else figured out crowdfunding, and she tours the world, and she's basically not just a songwriter, but a performance artist. She gets naked on stage and she lets people write things on her body. And she, you know, auctions stuff off that's super personal online as part of her art. Mm-hmm. And while I wouldn't feel comfortable, you know, doing all the things that she does, I do have to admit, I felt a little bit of envy when I was reading her book. I was like, man, what would it feel like to be that free? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's just part of, like you said, the tightrope that we have to walk as traditional musicians who are also activists or artivists and maybe, you know, challenging some of the cultural norms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good to be intentional about the songs we sing and in the spaces we sing them in. You know, there are some mentors in the old time music community that I had who are older, maybe from a fundamentalist religious background that I'm not out to, that I would, you know, our relationship is based on music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's good things about that too. You know, when we can just connect through traditional music and get to know each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a good intermediary from people who come from different perspectives.
Right.
And of course, there's value in standing up and saying, hey, this is a song about some oppression or injustice that's happening. And I want to share it because it's important to me. So, yeah, this balance can be found, I hope, because I think they're hard questions.
Well, thanks for talking to me about that. I think that's just it's an interesting subject and one which I'm sure we will have many conversations about in the future.
I hope so.
But we should probably wrap it up, go eat some of these goodies that we have over here and some chocolate. We have a little dessert stash waiting. We're joking because normally I record these podcasts in the morning because I'm a morning person and Sam is also a morning person. So hopefully we don't sound completely sleepy at this point because it's like on down in the evening right now.
It is.
But I wanted to ask one final question, just in light of what's going on in the world. You know, this is, it's really difficult to watch what's going on in Europe and to hear the reports coming out of Ukraine. And, you know, I think it's a normal human response at times like these, and really just at any moment in modern society in the last 3 years to potentially feel some despair and to feel really discouraged. And sometimes, and I've heard many artists echo this sentiment lately, that everything feels kind of frivolous when compared to what's going on over there. All the things that we normally do throughout the day. And since some of you guys might not know Sam, I will tell you that being around Sam is kind of like just liquid sunshine. He's so positive and supportive and kind and affirming. And, you know, you just have this wonderful energy about you. And I was thinking that maybe we could just leave our listeners this week with, what is it that you do inside yourself or in your mind or How do you deal with coping with whatever is going on in the world, with things that are happening that threaten to overwhelm, and bring that positive, loving attitude into the day?
Well, thank you for those words. I'm very humbled and moved to hear you say that, because I feel like you're a really bright presence and a bright light in my life and many others. And I get discouraged and feel despair when I listen to the news. Absolutely. I feel anxiety for sure. I mean, you know, I can only listen to the radio for so long, and I'm pretty guilty sometimes of sticking my head in the sand and sometimes not listening to the news and not staying informed about things when I feel like it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But the messages that I've heard from you and a lot of people, like in your last podcast, the episode preceding this one.
Yeah.
And Silas House recently quoted Audre Lorde and saying, I can't quote exactly, but you know, that self-care is self-preservation. Mm-hmm. I am learning that if I don't have enough quiet, enough solitude, enough space for to process the emotions and the difficult circumstances that we're all in. I mean, you know, even though we're not being attacked in Lexington, Kentucky tonight, you know, we're all dealing with trauma of different sorts. And I just think that solitude and pouring our hearts into whatever helps us to process this. For me, it's singing, trying to learn to play the fiddle, you know, helping other people learn to play music. That helps me feel hopeful. Mm-hmm. You know, that even if there is hurt everywhere, in every person, we still have a voice. We can still sing. And I don't feel like I have a lot of wise words to say on the subject, but I feel that that time to take care of ourselves is more important than ever in my life. I mean, I can't remember a time when I needed so much quiet anywhere I could get it.
So self-care, using our voice, doing the things that that bring us joy, and perhaps singing.
Yes, and connection, you know, like talking with you helps me feel better. Mm-hmm. Talking with you helps me feel grounded. You know, I mean, may we all have those people in our lives that we can talk to when we need to, and may we all have solitude when we need it, you know.
Amen. Well, I think that's a great note to go out on, and if I can get permission, I will add in one of Sam's songs.
You absolutely have my permission, yes.
So I'm going to leave you with Singing Bird from Eight Wee Brothers, and I'm so grateful for Sam's voice in this world, so grateful we got to talk to him today, and I encourage you to go seek out his music and enjoy it right now.
His song up in the blue. I've heard the blackbird pipe his note. I've heard the thrush and the linnet too. But there's none of them can sing so sweet, my singing bird, as you. Warm him on my breast. There's none of them can sing so sweet, my singing bird, as you. my window I will lean, and it seems I hear my singing bird. Though a thousand miles between, there's none of them can sing so sweet, my singing bird, as you.
This episode of What Dreamers Do is sponsored by the online Appalachian Flatfooting and Clogging Academy, the only course of its kind and the most comprehensive step-by-step program available for dancers learning this style. I teach beginning and intermediate students the steps and skills they need to dance to traditional mountain music so that they can be confident, joyful dancers and improvisers. Unlike others who just teach the same handful of steps or who just teach routines, I give you not only a bountiful library of steps, but a framework for understanding how the steps fit together with the music. Learn more about the Academy and get started for free with my video tutorial, The Three Essential Steps for Appalachian Flatfooting and Clogging. Visit www.carlagover.com today.
It's a holy fight.